السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. السلام عليكم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله محمد.
First of all, I want to offer my congratulations for the auspicious occasion of the birth anniversary of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. And actually tonight was Eid, and tomorrow night is finished. But although every day has to be Eid, inshallah, if our actions are righteous and so on and so forth. I wanted to continue from last night's speech, and inshallah I will do tomorrow with your permission, because I've been asked to speak about a few words on Imam Hassan alayhi salam. So with your permission, we'll continue last night's speech tomorrow. In relation to the Ahlul Bayt, there's one equation that states that their essence is one, or their light is one. And here what they mean by essence or light, there are a lot of deep discussions on what this means. But for our purposes, when we were discussing the fitrah a few nights ago, that maximal, actualized, unveiled fitrah is on a par with the light. And since that fitrah is unveiled in complete terms in relation to the Ahlul Bayt, they say their fitrah is one. It's from one light, one essence. However, when there are differences amongst them, it's not because of their essence. It's because of the differences of time, place, and circumstances which lead them to manifest differently. So they are different manifestation-wise, but the essence is one. And that is what is meant by light. The fitrah, the pure fitrah. You have to go back to a few nights ago. That discussion was important to understand this. So there should be no discussion as to were they earthly or were they light. These kind of discussions don't really serve any purpose. And if two parties are arguing with one another because one says one is light and the other say they're earthly, they shouldn't argue, because in religion and in Islam, the Ahlul Bayt are both. They're earthly creatures, and as a result of their pure fitrat, they're heavenly creatures. Me and you have that potential. We can be angelic or even super angelic. So this shouldn't really ever be an issue. However, the differences manifestation-wise amongst the Imams is because, yes, the fitrah is wrong. But this fitrah, in different times, places, and circumstances, it manifests differently. Not that the Imams themselves would have acted differently. Okay, that was one point. The next point is that in relation to Imam Hassan alayhi salam, he had a very close relationship with the Holy Messenger. And it wasn't a grandfather-grandson relationship. It was much more than that. The Holy Messenger, when Imam Hassan as a child would enter the mosque, he would come down from the pulpit, kiss the Imam, then go up on the pulpit again. That's not a normal grandfather-grandson relationship. something special here. And there's one prophetic tradition where the Holy Messenger said that if the intellect, aql, was to be embodied in a person, it would be Imam Hassan alayhi salam. And whoever likes Imam Hassan, I will like them. But liking the Imams is something that Muslims unfortunately have taken too lightly. A few days ago, someone asked me that, can the muhibbin of Amirul Mu'mineen go to hell? The lovers of Amirul Mu'mineen that we all profess to be, can they go to hell? And the answer is, of course they can. Because to be a muhib and lover of Amirul Mu'mineen, this term, muhib, lover, it has different degrees. There's a superficial degree of a lover of Amirul Mu'mineen, and there are batini, inner, esoteric degrees of loving Amirul Mu'mineen. If you only love him superficially, be rest assured that hell is a very open option for you, because you still haven't grown spiritually if you suffice with superficially loving Amirul Mu'mineen. You see, it's like the shuhada. Do all the shuhada go to heaven? Can a shaheed go to hell? The answer is yes. A shaheed can go to hell, because a shaheed also has degrees. We have a superficial degree of a shaheed, which fiqh describes. And fiqh says whoever dies in the battlefront during a war, they are shaheed. That is the superficial understanding of a shaheed. But there are spiritual degrees of being a shaheed, where one sees the metaphysical realms, where one sees Allah ultimately. Now you imagine someone going to war, not for Allah's sake, rather for their prestige. They want to return and then pose and boast in front of the people. They didn't go for Allah's sake. They went for their country, qua country's sake, not for Allah's sake. These people may go, some people may go there, many people may go for to escape military services. Many people may go for money purposes. These people with such intentions, they become a shaheed. But it doesn't mean they'll go to heaven. The intentions were impure, but they were still a shaheed. But the lowest degree of a shaheed. But to suffice with the superficial degree of a shaheed, that will not guarantee anything in the hereafter. And the same with scholars. We have traditions. In the hereafter, many scholars, many on the outside good scholars, not corrupt scholars. Those people, yes, they go to hell. But people, scholars who were not corrupt people, but they won't be going to heaven at the start. And when they're asked why, they said, you preached to the people for money, and they gave you money, and that's what you wanted. It wasn't for Allah's sake. You preached to the people for prestige and honor, and you had a lot of prestige. We gave you prestige and honor, and that's what you wanted. It wasn't for Allah's sake. Some people, scholars, they fight and preach for Allah's sake. For example, in Iran, there are many scholars who, the history of the revolution, people have observed this. One was Shahid Beheshti, for example, that he will always tell people that we've given our honor away for Allah's sake, and we're ready to give our lives for Allah's sake. And Shahid Beheshti, he received so much slander from a lot of Iranian people. Not, you know, tens or hundreds, many, many thousands in the beginning of the revolution. Because they were not aware. They were brainwashed, many people. They said he was corrupt sexually in relation to money-wise and property-wise. He had this, he stole that. But all these things, he said, I'm ready to give my honor for the sake of Allah. And he never made an issue out of it. He only fought in the name of Allah for the revolution. These people are very rare. Very rare. People aren't ready for their honor to be compromised. Even though we say to them, it's for Allah's sake, people can't understand that. No, very few people are ready for their honor to be destroyed for Allah's sake. Very few people have iman that inna al-izzata lillah jami'a. So here with the muhib of the imams, a lover of the imams, if it's only the superficial love, we're fooling ourselves. We're just playing in this world. It has to be a more deeper love for Amir al-Mu'mineen. That deeper love is only acquired when you become like Amir al-Mu'mineen in actions. With Imam Hassan too, when the Holy Messenger says, whoever likes Hassan, I like him or her, is that whoever you are, we have to become Hassani. We have to incorporate the attributes of Imam Hassan. Since manifestation-wise, the Imams differ, because as a result of time, place, circumstances, they manifested certain attributes more than other attributes. So you have to imagine the Imams over 250 years, it's one person, and then analyze those attributes that each Imam manifested. That other Imams didn't manifest. They had those attributes, but it wasn't manifested as much as other Imams because of the difference in time, place, and circumstances. With Imam Hassan, one of the titles he has, alayhi salam, is he is the Kareem of the Ahlul Bayt. He is Kareem. Now, Kareem has many meanings, but there's one essential meaning which is inclusive in all those different applications of how to behave in a Kareem manner. For example, one meaning is if someone gives one's wealth, a part of it, to others. And then it applies even more when you give some of your wealth, especially to the needy, especially before they ask you for help. These people are Kareem. Or for example, having a pleasant disposition and temperament at times of difficulty. That is being Kareem. That there's a situation that is arising between two people, two parties, whatever, but those difficulties, it makes you behave with the other party in a Kareem way. The essential meaning of Kareem is to be dignifying with the people, with yourself. Grant dignity to people. So for example, with giving to the needy before they ask, you're giving dignity to the needy. Another example of being Kareem is giving food to the needy. For example, people who give food during the night, it's a very blessed act. It's a Hassani act. It's an act of dignity. One is acting in a kareem way. But you do it for Allah's sake. Sometimes you provide food for Allah's sake. That is the hasani way. Sometimes you provide food so people know who you are. No, that's not the hasani way. And you can always tell. For example, if you provide food for the people for Allah's sake, and let's say the people criticize the food, if you truly did it for Allah's sake, you won't be disappointed. Because you know Allah knows, and you only did it for Allah's sake. If you do become disappointed, it's because you were looking for that prestige, name, honor, title amongst the people. Oh, he, Mr. X, Mrs. Y gave the food. It turned out bad, you become disappointed because your prestige is compromised, maybe. But giving food for Allah's sake is something very important. Now, sometimes the food is physical food, sometimes it's spiritual food, but this is a dignifying act and being kareem. And the reason is this, that when you do these acts, when you give to others for Allah's sake, you can only truly do it for Allah's sake when you truly believe that this thing that you're giving, be it food, your wealth, your knowledge, it's not yours. Nothing is yours. You are wholly, with a W, dependent upon Allah. All that you have is from Allah. The more this aspect of Tawheed is incorporated within you, the more you can be kareem. The reason why we don't do things, we don't give to others for Allah's sake, we do give to others, but not for Allah's sake, is because we haven't understood this aspect of Tawheed. Tawheed is superficial. Now, in the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, there are certain parameters given. They're teaching us to evaluate yourself to see whether you are kareem or not. These are evaluating parameters. And everyone has to evaluate themselves. Don't look at other people. When you look at other people and try to evaluate other people, that in most cases is a disease in itself. You just look at yourself. In those traditions, one indicator is having true taqwa. Now, taqwa has many different meanings, but the minimum is doing the wajibat, refraining from the sins, the muharramat. There's a story that once Imam Hassan was in his tent in his city, which was between Medina and Mecca, and I've forgotten the name of that town, but he was in the tent. A lady was passing by and was annihilated in his beauty, in Imam Hassan's beauty. But Imam Hassan was very similar in appearance and ethics to the Holy Messenger. And then she went into the tent and expressed that she wants to offer herself to the Imam. The Imam said, "Don't invite me to divine punishment." The Imam could have easily read a marriage contract, permanent or temporary. And there was no one there. It was in a desert between Mecca and Medina. He was alone in a tent. A woman comes, offers herself, and there's no one there. But he said, "Don't invite me to divine punishment." And it didn't even have to be a divine punishment. He could have easily read the contract. I'm saying this because this is where one's taqwa is strong. It's not only the minimum, it's gone far beyond the minimum. Just because some people have animalistic needs, yes, according to the dry letter of the law, it may allow you to do certain things. But then, that's going to be something animalistic. Where's taqwa going to go? If you want to stick to the letter of the law, you can do many things here, for example, in America. And unfortunately, the youth are doing these things. And they're coming to the Mawlanas to ask. Their parents usually don't know. And they're entering and they're doing these things. At least it's good they want to do, they're abiding by the letter of the law. But these people will never grow spiritually. They're not growing. To grow, you have to go deeper in religion. You have to go deeper in spirituality. Sticking to the letter of the law and saying that's period, you will never grow. The community will never grow. For a community to grow, no, it has to be Hassani. They have to be Kareem. Is it difficult? Of course it's difficult. But be rest assured, with a community that only suffices with the letter of the law, it won't grow. And those communities that suffice with the letter of the law, they easily break up. Because there's no dignity amongst the members. No one cares for the other. No one forgives the other. Someone does someone else an injustice. Yes, it was wrong. According to the letter of the law, you can express that wrongness and say that was wrong. But you're not growing. You just stuck to the letter of the law. People would come and swear and abuse Imam Hassan alayhi salam. But he would invite them, feed them, be hospitable to them. Then did these people change when they see this kind of behavior? When someone slanders another person, yes, in fiqh, they say, yes, you have rights now, you can retaliate, do this, do that. But forgiving is much better. The Hassani way is granting dignity, to be kareem. Another evaluating factor is that to see whether you're kareem or not, at times of anger and depression and sadness, you soothe it very quickly. You're angry, or you're very sad, you soothe and control it within a very short period of time. Not after 2.5 years, you're still angry with the same person. The maximum the Sharia accepts of being angry is 3 days. Anything after 3 days, you're going spiritually depressing yourself. It's all on downhill from then on. You're contaminating, polluting yourself. You don't see it. And this pollution, it reaches a threshold which over time, it will open you up to do sins of the Sharia. You're angry, soothe it. You don't know how to soothe your anger, the answer is Tawheed. You suffice with the superficial of Tawheed all your life, that's where the problem is. You never went deep into Tawheed. Tawheed is the cure of all ills. Another is doing good to others before you're asked. That's important. You see someone is needy, before they ask, you go and help them without people knowing. Because once people know you're helping, it's a bit difficult to control your ego. For example, there's a fundraiser soon here. fundraising, okay, it's okay. They want to keep the center going and everything is okay. But try to speak with the organizers beforehand. And if you want to help, tell them not to mention my name. Just tell the organizer, this is my check. I'll give this many dollars, or I can help in another way. But don't mention my name. Because usually when people's names are, when they come out in charity work especially, usually the ego predominates sooner or later. The next index is forgiving, which we've spoken about. And the other one is relations with neighbors. That's also very important. Don't say that, oh, this neighbor is non-Muslim, has no worth, has no dignity, has no sanctity. We have nothing to do with them. That's wrong, brother. Yes, you have to have a lot of your nature, your spirit has to be such that it spreads around the people around you. So it starts with the family and then your neighbors. It has to spread. If it doesn't spread, your Kareem nature is limited. Or you may not even have it. But this is an index, relations with good, relations with neighbors, that the neighbors benefit from your existence. That they like you, they want to speak with you, they want to interact with you. You have to interact with your neighbors. Wallahi, the Holy Messenger would speak and interact with non-Muslims. And would show utmost compassion to non-Muslims. So all these are indicators. Now, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, especially the ibadat also, the way history reports it, that when he would do the wudu, his color would change. Would become pale, yellow. That's because he's doing the wudu. When we do the wudu, it's just splashing water. Because we suffice with the letter of the law of wudu. Two washings, two wipings, that's it. And that's why we never grow with the wudu. But the wudu, every component has meaning. We've spoken about that before. Imam Hassan will do it with that meaning of each component. And it's all ultimately tawhidi. His color would change. When he would stand for prayer, he would shiver. When we stand for prayer, our mobiles are on, we're all talking, we're all chatting. We're attentive to everything but Allah. And that's why our salat is also a superficial salat. Because all our lives were sufficing with the superficial. When you suffice with the superficial, you'll never grow. You can't grow. You're like a corpse. There's no dynamicity, there's no growth anymore. Yes, you will go to heaven, don't worry about that. And that heaven will be animalistic for you too. The animalistic things you wanted in this world, you'll get it there. But that's it. When he would recall death, he would faint. Look at the ma'rifat. Well, we have to learn that ma'rifat. We have to learn what is the philosophy of recalling death. He walked. For Hajj, 20 times barefooted. And in one tradition, he said that I'm embarrassed to meet Allah at the Holy Sanctuary. When I go to the Holy Sanctuary in Mecca, I'm embarrassed to meet Allah if I don't walk to Him. He could have gone with a camel, but he was embarrassed. I have to walk barefooted. I'm embarrassed to meet Allah at the sanctuary, not having walked barefooted. compare that kind of a Hajj with our Hajj. Okay, we go with plane, with planes, well, that maybe we have to some degree. But they're the best of hotels, the best of expenses. We experience no burdens to go there. We're here at night with our work, absorbed in our work, totally, you know, mentally occupied with the worldly life. The next morning, we're in Mecca, the next morning. And there was the person now to do suluk and spiritual wayfaring. How can you do that? Until the day before, you were drowned in the worldly life. But those who walk, at least for kilometers, they journey, they burden themselves, they detach themselves from the worldly life during this journey. When they go to the holy sanctuary, it's different. Another of the Imam's characteristics that he would always return benevolence. Whoever does anything good, he would always return that. A sister once went and greeted him with some flowers. And then that sister was a slave. And then the Imam returned the greeting and then freed her. Everyone asked, why did you free her? Because the Imam's slavery existed before Islam. But Islam put into play many mechanisms to free slaves. Many mechanisms are within the Sharia, its rationale being to free slaves after educating them, because slavery at that time were only confined to prisoners of war. It wasn't like today's or 2 centuries ago, the slavery of those days, just because of the color of your race, no, prisoners of war. Then they would be educated, then they would be freed. Here, the Imam then freed the slave. They asked why. He recited the verse, وَإِذَا حُيِّيْتُمْ بِتَحِيَّا فَحَيُّوا بِأَحْسَنَ مِنْهَا أَوْ رُبْدُوهَا. That when you're greeted with a greeting, return it in a better way or return it equally. And then the Imam said, isn't granting them freedom from being a slave better? Because he wanted to do something better. She said salam with flowers. He returned the salam with her freedom. Also, eating with the poor, with the needy, with those, in today's terminology, with the lower social class. Eating and dining with them, he would never refuse. For example, today, if someone who is not very well off goes to someone who is very well off and says, I'm inviting you to this restaurant, usually the person who is very well off either won't accept, or if they do, they say, okay, but I have to pay for it. But that's all the ego. It's all this quasi, this pseudo honor that they've assigned for themselves. They can't tolerate being accepting an invitation from a not well-off person, not so well-off person. Then in front of others, seeing that the not so well-off person is feeding and paying for this well-off person. See, these things one can judge for oneself. One can judge oneself very easily here. What would one do? It's recorded in the Ahadith that 3 times in his life he gave away more than half of his wealth. See? Because he didn't see that wealth as his. So there's no attachment to it. For example, a scholar wears a ring. Someone comes and says, can you give me that ring? Now, it's not a very polite thing to do to a scholar. But let's say if someone says, can you give me that ring? If the scholar doesn't give the ring, what's the reason behind it? Why shouldn't he give the ring? because he's attached to the ring. Or it has some sentimental non-Allah value at the end of the day. Nothing that you have is yours, but to understand that wholeheartedly, your tawheed has to be strong. Finally, the last story is, it's a very famous story with Imam Hassan alayhi salam, where he was passing by and a slave was having dinner, and whilst the slave was having dinner, the slave would give his dinner to a dog that was around the slave. He would feed the dog also with some of his own food. We have something similar to this in relation to Imam Hassan too. But Imam saw this scene, approached the slave and inquired first, what was your reasoning for feeding the dog? The slave said, I was embarrassed that a spirited creature, because animals have spirits, that a creature with a spirit is seeing me eating food and I'm not giving any food to them. I'm embarrassed. The Imam not only bought the freedom of the slave from the master, but then gave a plot of land to that slave and some money. Now the question is, why would the Imam give so much to such a person with this one action? And the answer is because the Imam saw a leader here. Someone who's embarrassed before a dog, they can be a true leader. They know how to treat people. They'll be embarrassed to do any form of zulm and oppression to people when they're not ready to even eat and not eat in front of a dog. This person can be a community leader. So he frees the slave, gives him a plot of land to live comfortably, and then some money. That is of value. The Imam saw that. And that's why most prophets, if not all, they were all shepherds. Because shepherds are with animals. Me and you, we are humans phenotypically on the outside. But our true nature is that of animals. To be a prophet of the people, you have to be able to tolerate these people who have animalistic hearts. And so they were all shepherds. And they would love their animals. They would guide their animals. When you can love animals, then you can love people. Although some people, they have an obsessive love towards animals, but they disrespect people. That means that love for animals isn't genuine. Or at least it isn't for Allah's sake. And also, there's a degree of obsession and waswas there too. Otherwise, if it's genuine, they would have to respect humans a fortiori. Imam Khomeini, when he returned to Iran from Najaf in Iraq, well, there was an Islamic revolution, succeeded, and then now Islamic law was ruling. And with Islamic law, there are penalties for certain crimes, and these penalties were executed. A scholar in Najaf, when he saw these executions, which had happened based on the Sharia, the scholar said to Imam, you never killed a fly in Najaf. How come you're killing people now in Iran? It's a very ignorant thing, very impolite thing to say, but most people are impolite. It's a reality we have to face. But this impoliteness that most people are is a way that you can grow spiritually if you encounter that impoliteness in the best way. But if you want to answer that person, then no, you won't grow. Many scholars in Iran who received a lot of abuse and are receiving a lot of abuse, many of them, not all, they never reply to that abuse. They don't see it as necessary. They're acting for Allah's sake. And then people say, why don't you reply? You have to reply to all this abuse you're receiving. No, they don't. Yes, they have a right to, and maybe they should on a fiqhi point of view, but they're spiritual. Anyway, the scholar said to Imam, you never killed a fly in Najaf, but now you're killing people. Well, that was, Imam didn't kill people, it was based on the Sharia. That person has to go to Allah. But the point was this, he was right in the first clause. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi, he would never kill even a fly. That's important. When there was a fly in the house, the way it's been reported, they would just open the door. They would say, why do you open the door? They would say, let the fly go. I'm scared of my hereafter. Because every act you do, moment to moment, will be manifested, reflected in the hereafter. Every act. Imam was scared that the killing of a fly may be reflected in a negative way. Even though you are allowed, according to fiqh, to kill a fly which is bothering you. But Imam is looking beyond that. He's not living superficially. He doesn't want the bad effects of killing a fly to be incorporated within himself and to be reflected in the hereafter. Now, some people, not only do they kill flies or even larger than flies, they sting people, they injure people, they denigrate people, they disgrace people, they embarrass people, they bother people. I had one more start, he said, even bothering someone, it's on a par with killing someone physically, but it's a lower degree. Allahu Akbar, look at it. To be safe not to even bother people, the Urafa have given one key. To be safe not to bother people. They said, don't speak. Speak minimally. Don't speak a lot. Some people speak a lot. And in that speaking, something happens. Me, you, it happens. Minimal. Be careful. Now, there are exceptions to all this, but if I was to go through all the exceptions, it would take many lectures and everything. But the point is, we have to live hasani. The more you incorporate these attributes of Imam Hassan, beyond the letter of the law, the more you incorporate them, yes, the more you are hasani, and inshallah, the more your hereafter will be hasani. Wa sallallahu alaihi wa sallam.